You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, everybody, and happy Valentine's Day, you lovebirds. Welcome to a special Friday edition of Locked On Vikings. So today, most of the show is going to be the finale of the Ultimate Division crossover. If you haven't been keeping up, you should go back and listen to the other episodes, because every Locked On host from every NFC North team, that's Lauren Cox of Locked On Bears, Matt Derry of Locked On Lions, Peter Bukowski of Locked On Packers, and of course myself, we have all been talking about each team of the NFC North. The Wednesday episode is the Vikings one, if you're only interested in that. But today, we are talking about the division in general, and it's one of the only times that all four of us could get in the same Skype call together and discuss this stuff. It was really cool, great conversation, and really excited to show that to you. And that's why we're having this special Friday episode, because I didn't have anywhere else to put it. But before we begin that, I still want to give you the Viking of the day. And today's Viking of the day is Dennis Green. We're sticking with the Black History Month theme here, and Dennis Green really broke a lot of barriers, not only by being one of the first African-American head coaches in the NFL. I believe Art Schell was the first, correct me if I'm wrong on that, but Denny Green was definitely the first Vikings African-American head coach. But he was really known throughout his time as somebody who gave chances to people who wouldn't get chances from someone else, you know, and bringing in guys like Warren Moon and Randall Cunningham, who were kind of retreads. But, you know, giving a chance to somebody like Randy Moss or Robert Griffith, who was an undrafted free agent who flew all the way across the country to work out. And even then, there were scouts in the Vikings organization who were trying to say, hey, this guy is nobody. Stop wasting his time and just send him out of here. And Dennis Green said, no. He came here. We're going to let him work out. And sure enough, he ended up being a stalwart in the Vikings defense for a long time, including a key part of the 1998-15-1 team. His relationship with Randy Moss is famous and well-documented, and the fact that Randy Moss came out of Marshall as somebody who was seen, you know, as a problem kid, somebody with off-field issues and a bunch of red flags, and Denny Green was somebody who would give a guy like that a chance, and boy, aren't we glad he did. It's hard to overstate the impact that somebody like Denny Green had on the NFL and its relationship with race, because, you know, Art Schell was a black coach as well, but he wasn't nearly as successful as Denny Green was. I mean, Denny Green was successful for a decade. He had one season that was worse than 8-8. He was in the playoffs just about every year. And you might quibble about how he never got, you know, he never did well in the playoffs. He only made it to one NFC championship game, or two NFC championship games. Bless me, I almost forgot 41 Donut. Never made it to a Super Bowl. All that stuff. You could quibble about that stuff, and sure. But for the barrier that he was breaking, for the point that his existence makes about the capability of African-American people to coach football games, something that was very in question, and if you look at the makeup in the league, might still be a little bit in question. How's that Rooney Rule going? His impact is huge. And I don't know, without Denny Green, we might not see a team take a chance on Tony Dungy, and maybe they don't win that Super Bowl in 06. Maybe, you know, the Steelers don't hire Mike Tomlin after 1 year as a defensive coordinator. And maybe 2008 goes a little bit differently. Maybe the entire AFC North for like a decade goes a little bit differently. The landscape of the NFL could be a lot different were it not for Denny Green. Not to mention, you know, other coaches that came from his tree, like Brian Billick. And who can forget Andre Patterson, who was a coach at Stanford at the time in 1998. They had a vacancy on their defensive at their defensive line coaching position. And speaking of defensive line, I mean, John Randall is another guy that I don't know if he exists without Denny Green giving him a chance, even though he's undersized. And that is just such a good example, not only from an inclusion standpoint and then the Black History Month and all of the things that we definitely, you know, should take this time to reflect on and appreciate, but it's also just good team building, right? There are market inefficiencies. I think the Patriots are great at this. There are efficiencies when it comes to a stereotype. You know, people don't think that white athletes are as athletic. They don't think that black athletes are as cerebral. That was way worse back in the 70s and 80s, but it still does prevail a little bit today. And if you are the smart team that takes advantage of that and drafts Lamar Jackson or Christian McCaffrey, then you can end up, you know, with something that other people may have not valued quite as high. And I think that's a philosophy that Denny Green embraced, not only from a racial perspective, though that was important, but, you know, getting undersized guys like John Randall, bringing in guys like Robert Smith, taking a chance on a guy with red flags like Randy Moss. And I can see parallels in this current Vikings team. You know, there were a lot of red flags that took Dalvin Cook off of people's boards. The Vikings did their homework. They realized that wasn't going to be an issue. And look at Dalvin Cook in the community now and the person that he has become, the role model that he is. I look at somebody like Danielle Hunter, who a lot of teams didn't even really have any interest in because he didn't get a lot of sacks in college, and look at how that turned out. And part of that is because of, like, Andre Patterson specifically taking that philosophy from Dennis Green, that, you know, give somebody a chance. And the way that Andre Patterson talks about it and the way that he talks about his relationship with Green and the philosophy that he's taken is, you know, I want to focus on what guys can do and not what they can't do. And I love that draft philosophy. Don't look at Danielle Hunter as somebody who can't do this particular technique or somebody who didn't get sacks. Look at him as somebody with a lot of athletic talent. Look at what he is capable of and then figure out how to win with it. I think the Vikings did a good job of that with Kirk Cousins, right? What is he capable of? He's good at rolling out. He's good at play action, and he's good at throwing deep. Let's build an offense that is, you know, centered around that. Let's bring in Gary Kubiak, who's the god of it. So even though, you know, Denny Green, of course, he passed away a few years ago, I think his impact on the NFL, like, the NFL will never be the same as it would have been were Denny Green not a part of it. But I also think the Vikings will never be the same, just because I think that philosophy has stuck around, even though we're several coaches and regimes removed from Denny Green. At least Andre Patterson is still in the building. Of course, he left for a while and then came back. But that philosophy, that idea of, you know, not letting a certain red flag or deal breaker, you know, dissuade you from taking somebody who might otherwise be good, you know, take the Hercules Mata'afa. Take a chance on the short kid out of Maryland who plays a little bigger than he looks, but he doesn't have the measurables, you know, take the digs. And honestly, if we just took a moment every year to just step back and remember Denny Green and the impact he had on football in Minnesota and nationwide, I certainly would not be one to complain. So on that note, I have the conversation with all of the other NFC North hosts ready and queued up here, and we are going to get into NFC North talk and how the season went and who's the best coach and who's the best quarterback and all kinds of interesting stuff like that. We will get into that here in just 1 second.
All right, the final day of our ultimate crossover. Hopefully it has been the ultimate crossover for you listening at home. I am Peter Bukowski with Locked On Packers. I am with the whole NFC North team, Luke Braun, Matt Derry, Lauren Cox. Luckily, a lot of easy names. You guys are really making it easy on me. The NFC North in 2020, as we look ahead, is going to be competitive. Every team is going to feel like they have a shot at the playoffs. So I want to start with one of the two teams that didn't make the playoffs and is close. Lauren, with the Bears, is there a pathway that you see to getting back there? And what is the thing that you think will keep the Bears potentially from making it back and competing for the NFC North?
It's the obvious answer, but it all comes back to that quarterback position. I think the fewer games Mitchell Trubisky starts in 2020 potentially means the better an opportunity. I mean, I think the path is similar to the Tennessee Titans model. I think that's going to be the way the Bears opt for. And I think the road to the playoffs is Trubisky struggles for the first X number of weeks, 4 games, 6 games, 8 games, and maybe you win half or a third of those, and then another quarterback comes in and starts to put things together and has the offense operating just a little bit more smoothly than Trubisky was able to do. And you pair that with a defense that should be back in the top 10 range where it's been kind of hovering the last few years. And I think, you know, a strong late season stretch with a backup quarterback who was brought in because they had the ability to start. That's sort of like my path. I it's hard for me to envision another scenario where Trubisky has so much support around him and plays well enough to really carry this team the way that they're going to need. They can't, it's going to be unreachable for them to recreate what they did in 2018 in a way where the quarterback play didn't make that big of a difference on a week in and week out basis. Cause we haven't really seen a lot of fluctuation from Trubisky. He's kind of always stayed at this baseline level of can hit some impressive throws in clutch moments, but misses a lot of the easy ones. But it's been a question of, have they been able to just be perfect around him? They were pretty darn close in 2018 and pretty darn far in 2019. And I think if they can figure out that position, so many other things around them will improve as a result and make everybody else's job a little bit easier and be that difference between playoffs and not.
Is there a discussion worth having about who the best quarterback in the division is going to be in 2020?
I thought, honestly, for the first half of last season, I thought it was Matthew Stafford. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think at least at the start of the year, for sure. Like Kirk Cousins was fantastic. Rodgers, you know, it's funny that people, and Peter will tell you that, you know, the whole Rodgers thing, and Peter twice on our shows, and we did the crossovers, was like, he's not playing all that well, but you wouldn't have known it because they were winning and occasionally some gaudy numbers. But yeah, Stafford, and as long as he's back next year, which I think he will be, and the health thing is a huge concern for Detroit with Stafford, two straight years now with this broken bones in his back. They claim he's fine. And there's all that Tua talk, which we talked about earlier in the week, that is hovering around Detroit. Do they pull the trigger and do this? But yeah, no, I would say Stafford had a great start to the year, but how can you argue with what Cousins did, the whole season?
What about moving forward, though, if we're going to project it forward to 2020? Who do we think the best QB will be in 2020?
Teddy Bridgewater on the Bears.
Don't get the Bears fans' listeners' hopes up.
You stay away from Teddy.
he would be cherished in Chicago.
Yeah, if you keep Cousins in a wide zone, which is what they'll do, Cousins can thrive in a wide zone. The best years he's had in his whole career have been with McVay or Kubiak. Wide zone, Shanahan scheme, and they're going to do that again, and I think he could get a good year out of Cousins. Hard to argue against Rodgers or know what like you're going to get out of him and know what age is doing, or is he going to stay healthy, and like more questions have popped up over the last 3 years. But I think if you wanted to bet Cousins, I wouldn't blame you. I don't know. It's hard for me to reconcile that with like the other, you know, kind of like nervous breakdown moments that he has fumbling and stuff, and he was way more conservative, and there's plenty of problems. You know, a lot of Vikings fans are talking about drafting Jordan Love, or you know, trading up to try to get somebody and get a new quarterback, or should we even extend Cousins in the first place? So there's, it's far from a certainty, but I get why you'd bet on him.
Is it weird that I didn't hate the Pro Football Talk suggestion of Kirk Cousins for Jimmy G?
I don't know how to think about that because I don't know anything about Jimmy G. Like, I have no evaluation on him. But sure, I mean, like, a guy who can only thrive in a wide zone on a huge contract for another guy who can only thrive in a wide zone on a huge contract? Yeah, why not?
Do we have a clear picture of who the best coach is in this division?
I mean, it's got to be LaFleur right now, right?
Like...
He's the only one who's like not on the hot seat if things go bad in 2020.
That's true. I mean, I personally am torn because I have so much respect for Mike Zimmer. I think he's a really good defensive coach. I do worry about his tendency to feel like the run game needs to be everything. I worry about any coach. Like Pete Carroll is the same kind of guy. I think Pete Carroll is a hell of a coach, but his insistence on running the ball is holding his team back. Do you think... like Mike Zimmer can adjust? Is that something that because if he can, if this offense all of a sudden Kirk Cousins is throwing it 30 times a game, maybe that's not even the best thing for him. But I do wonder about that with Zimmer.
Yeah, they got a lot more aggressive in 2019. Even though they passed the ball fewer times, they made more out of those passes. Yeah. And it was just more about like shot plays and, you know, long, like more intermediate passes and stuff like that. But yeah, that is a huge weakness of Mike Zimmer, is this idea that, you know, he feels like he needs to come in and say, no, run the ball more. I think with Kubiak at the helm, Zimmer will feel a lot better kind of taking a hands-off approach than he did with the very green, very young Kevin Stefanski. But I also think that Gary Kubiak feels the same way about the run, and that they need to set up all these things before they can get away with play action. And I think they're wrong about that. And I think that that's a weakness for Zimmer, but I've always thought that Zimmer was at least a top 10, if not a top 5 coach. He's always gotten more out of his players than their talent level. I don't think that that's really been untrue. I mean, they've been a top 10 team since he got here. And the only, a lot of the arguments against him are these kind of fallacies rooted in like, but they didn't win a Super Bowl, and it's like, whatever.
I thought LaFleur did a whale of a job this year, for sure, especially with all that Aaron Rodgers talk at the start of the year in July and August. Can they get along? Will this young kid be able to reel him in? It's funny with Zimmer. Dude won a playoff game on the road this year. He comes to Detroit and does that. He'll get the damn keys to the city. I mean, are you kidding?
And by the way, you're welcome, Peter, because now the worst 13-3 team in history is the only one that lost on wildcard weekend. So that's our favor to you.
Hey, look, Packer fans, because there was no question Packer fans were way more afraid of the New Orleans Saints than the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, it wasn't even close. I thought the Saints were the second best team in the conference, and they lost.
I thought they were the best team.
Well, funny how quiet Lauren is right now. If we did this crossover a year ago today, oh my God, it'd be a Matt McKee love fest.
Yeah, that's the
and
thing.
And rightfully so.
Yeah. I think Nagy got in some areas more blame than he deserved this season. There was certainly criticism for his indecision with the running game and not really sticking with it when it would struggle a little bit. But there were some offensive line issues in there, and then the quarterback issues. I mean, some Bears fans are saying, "I'll stand with Trubisky and let Matt Nagy go." So it's been like one of these fights of like,
ew.
You want to defend Matt Nagy and be like, "Hey, wait a minute, let's be serious here about the quarterback and the coach situation," but you don't want to excuse some of the mistakes he made either. So you're kind of just best to, I guess, stay quiet about Matt Nagy and see what he's able to do with this offense next year, because the scheme is there. We've seen it, and he's had to dumb some things down for Trubisky and scale some things back and simplify a lot of passing concepts that we're just not seeing the full open Kansas City Andy Reid type offense in Chicago because of what's happening with the quarterback position. So I give Matt Nagy the benefit of the doubt on a lot of that, but eventually there has to be some production here, and eventually he's got to put his foot down and say, okay, quarterback's not getting it done. Let's get somebody who can get it done so we can let Matt Nagy be Matt Nagy.
And yeah, I'd kind of go the other way. No.
You can't get rid of him until you have a quarterback.
We have to see Matt Nagy with a real quarterback. But this is to the point we made earlier. If Matt Nagy thinks that quarterback is Mitch Trubisky, that says as much about him as anything else, and that Fair becomes enough. A problem. I want to know from each of you, if you were in charge, you were running the team and you could pick one thing this offseason, whether it's a draft pick, a free agent, acquisition, a trade, the one thing that you'd like to see your team that is feasible, at least everyone, trade for Julio Jones or whatever. Give me something feasible or at least possible that your team could do. And let's start with Matt.
Well, the Detroit Lions are picking third. They need players. If they just sit there at three and just draft a guy, Jeffrey Okuda, Isaiah Simmons, Derek Brown, all needs. Mm-hmm. They're stupid. Bob Quinn has got to trade back. He's got to dangle that Tua pick. He's got to spend the next couple of months telling everybody how much they love Tua. They're going to work out Tua. They're going to interview Tua. Drive the price up. Make Miami beg for it. And then, and then the Dolphins can send you the fifth pick and a couple of second rounders or one of their first rounders. And accumulate those picks, and then if you draft at five, you still might get Okuda there, or Brown, or whomever. Simmons might all be there. To me, that's a no-brainer. If they just sit at, to me, I'd be okay if they took Tua. I would be. I'm not high on it, but I'd get it. Trade back. If they just stay at three, don't trade down, and take Okuda or one of these guys, I'll shake my head. The Lions must trade back, accumulate picks, and to get as many players as they can.
I like it, Lauren.
I hate to sound like a broken record, but give me a quarterback. I mean, really, like, I think, how about this for like a wish list kind of thing? I find myself in the camp that get Phillip Rivers if he's, obviously Tom Brady and Drew Brees to be determined whether either one of those is actually available, but I'd roll the dice on Phillip Rivers. Try that for a year or two, because I feel like that's about where this window is for this Bears team in terms of all the guys they've got locked in on contracts defensively. 2 years from now, then you'll start to have guys pushing 30 and those dollar amounts being pretty difficult. So, ride for a couple years of Phillip Rivers with Matt Nagy. See if you can, sneak into that Super Bowl discussion. And if it doesn't work out and Rivers is over the hill, then you're kind of back where you would have been without him anyway, still needing a quarterback and kind of in this time to reopen the championship window and blow things up a little bit. So, yeah, give me the veteran, potentially future Hall of Fame quarterback that I don't think is going to happen. I think the Bears will go with more of a backup competition option, but give me the bona fide starter who I think Matt Nagy could really do some things with.
I love that. Luke, what are you thinking?
I'm agonizing. On one hand, I want them to get a waiting in the wings Patrick Mahomes style quarterback that could take over if you decide you don't like Kirk Cousins. On the other hand, I'm thinking about the defensive line and how the interior of the defensive line was so bad and draft Javon Kinlaw or something. But I think I'm going to go with the problem that has plagued the Vikings for like a decade, and it's offensive line. Give me Josh Jones. He is the perfect tackle for his own scheme. He can plug and play, be a day one starter at left tackle, allow you to move Riley Reiff inside to guard, potentially restructure that contract, save a little bit of money. And then you would have an offensive line that can actually protect Kirk Cousins. And Kirk Cousins in a wide zone with a good offensive line, I like those chances.
Josh Jones from Houston, right? The offensive tackle, he's big, he's athletic. That works out for me. I like not a draft pick, not a free agent acquisition. I would be calling Les Snead, who needs to get off money, and saying, what is it going to take for us to get Robert Woods? Because I think he is someone who Matt LaFleur knows. It would save the Rams, who have to pay Cooper Kupp. They've got to pay Jared Goff, who, by the way, is the most expensive player in the league next year by salary cap cost. That is not great for them. Yikes. And if you're going to go build long term, you have to pay Cooper Kupp. And it's just untenable to pay Kupp, Cooks, and Woods. And I don't think anyone's going to trade for Brandon Cooks. So you're stuck. Even if it's going to be a second. Yeah, even if it's going to be a second, even a second and some stuff. If you put Woods in this Packers offense, reliability to create third downs, he can create shot plays. You can give him those jet sweeps, deep overs, deep posts, whatever you want to run, Robert Woods can run it. And I think he immediately puts the Packers in that favorite conversation in that kind of position. That's where I am for that.
Can I just throw a quick curveball at everybody's way? There's reports coming out today as we're recording over the weekend that the Dolphins are trying to move up to 2 to get Tua. So if the Redskins are somehow trading with Miami and Miami takes Tua, Chase Young at 3, the Lions, if that were to happen, the Lions should run that card up to Goodell before they even get through Tagovailoa, last name for Miami. So watch for that as well. If some of these reports out of South Florida are true, that Miami's trying to talk to the Redskins, because if Chase Young is somehow there at 3, then I'd be okay with them taking him there.
Yeah, totally flipping your script there with that one, Matt.
Makes me want Josh Jones all the more.
Well, and that could be posturing too, right? That could be Miami's way of saying, hey, if you don't play ball, Lions, we'll go over your head. That's what it sounds like. I mean, that seems, because they don't really have to go up to 2, because the Washington's not going to take a quarterback.
They could Josh Rosen, Dwayne Haskins, though, and take another first-round quarterback 2 years in a row.
I suppose they could.
Also a brand-new front office there in Washington now. So
Dan Snyder's still in charge, so always expect the unexpected with them. Do we have any final top-line thoughts, top treetop thoughts about 2020 in the NFC North? Anyone?
Still going to be one of the best divisions in football, I think.
It's going to be competitive. I think the good teams are going to fall back, and I think the bad teams are going to come up, and then it's going to be another weird one where everybody's two bounces away from going 9-7.
I think Minnesota wins it. If I was just guessing, I'm with Peter about the Packer regression, and I don't know. Maybe I like what Minnesota's doing, and they get healthy Thielen back and everything else. I think they'll definitely win it.
Wow, definitely win it. Matt, I never liked you. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm not even that confident.
Yeah, I think it's one of those. It feels like one of those divisions that the 10-6 could be enough, just because there'll be so much beat up teams that it's going to be a battle every time you play someone in the NFC North. There are no gimmies in this division. This is not, some of those AFC divisions where you have 2 or 3, 4 games a year where it's just write it in, you're winning.
And on that particularly non-committal note, that's going to do it for this episode of Locked On Vikings. And this week of Locked On Vikings, I hope you guys enjoyed the Ultimate Division crossover. I definitely enjoyed getting together with all those guys and recording, all those segments about the division and just talking about everything. We might get together again later in the summer, when we have time to talk about free agency and the draft and how it changed the landscape of the division and all that. Maybe, maybe not. We'll see how that all shakes out. But in the meantime, I will see you all on Monday for more Locked On Vikings goodness. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. Joe's on Twitter at LockedOnVikings. This show is available anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, or just ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. I'll see y'all on Monday. Have a good weekend, and as always, Skol.